And joining me in the KRVS studios, I'm very happy to say, is Linda Fries. She is a professor of visual arts here at UL Lafayette. She's also a very special professor. She holds the SLMCO Board of Regents Support Endowed Professorship in Art here at UL Lafayette, and was just recently awarded with one of our highest honors here at UL Lafayette, and that is the Distinguished Professor Award. And the Distinguished Professor Awards have been sponsored by the UL Foundation now for decades. I think it goes all the way back to the 60s when they were honoring professors for their work here on campus. So we're very glad to have you here to talk about your work, not only a specific book or exhibit, which of course you've come to us before about, but just about your work and your life here at UL. You've been here on campus since 1986, so it's coming up on, what is it now, 27 years that you've been a professor here. Generations, as we were just mentioning, of students have come under your mentorship and care and have gone on to be fabulous artists.
Thank you, Judith. It's so nice to be here.
Yes. Well, tell us just a bit about your background before we talk about your work now here at the university. Were you drawing as a young child? Were you always artistic?
I was always interested in art. And as I was mentioning to you earlier, my parents didn't really want me to study art in college because they wanted me to have a more secure future, and they wanted me to go to a school that didn't have an art department because they thought that that would be distracting to me.
She could get into her guilty pleasure art.
Yeah.
Oh, so what school did you end up going to?
I got my degrees from the University of California in Davis. So I was in California for 10 years. And then when I graduated, I applied to a number of jobs, and they offered me the job here. And I remember this was before emails, you know, and so everything was done by telephone. And I remember when they called me, they were offering me this job, and I was flipping through an atlas at my kitchen table thinking, where is Louisiana? I think it's somewhere between Florida and Texas. Yeah, it's somewhere down there. And
Did you have any images of Louisiana? What did you know about it or think about Louisiana at that moment?
Gosh, it was a complete blank. I really didn't know what it would be like at all. And that was one of the things that attracted me to coming here, is I thought this will be a completely new adventure. And I also was, I had lived in France for a while and speak French. And so I thought, wow, I could go to a place in the United States where people speak French. And so that was very intriguing too.
Isn't that interesting, the decisions we make that change our lives so much? And here you are 27 years later, living and working and loving Louisiana.
Yeah, and I thought I would come here for a couple of years and then go on to my real career.
It has that way of keeping people.
Yeah, it does.
Well, you know, Linda, a lot of people know you for your beautiful photographic collages. You've done a number of different series and have developed your style. But what did you, when you first started formally studying art, what was your style? What were you doing as an artist?
Well, I studied, as an undergraduate, I was a printmaker. And when I graduated, I was looking for a printing press, and they were too expensive. And I had a friend offer me a darkroom setup, and I remember it was $400 for the enlarger and the trays, and you know, I mean, the reels, I mean, everything. And I thought, well, I'll try that. And so I really got into photography on my own. And when I went back to graduate school, I took 7 years before I decided to go back to grad school. And by then I'd been really teaching myself about photography. Mm-hmm. And I'd photographed my sister a lot, and I did a lot of figurative work, and it was highly personal. It really talked a lot about my interior life and my emotional world. And through the years, I think that my work has become less about personal issues and more about cultural ideas. And then recently, really focused on the environment and our relationships with nature. Mm-hmm. So the conversation has gotten broader. But and I see that with my students, too, that they tend to start with very personal issues, and then they start to unfold other cultural mm-hmm. questions that are more inclusive of other people.
Right. I guess which we hope is a natural part of maturity as well, you know, going from that extremely personal to thinking more in universal terms, more about the world.
Yeah, I think that's true.
So when you did your early figurative photography, you're talking about most what we would think of as traditional photography, taking actual photographs, and they are what they are, photographs of people. When did you start manipulating photography and creating other forms? Did you do that personally or not until graduate school?
No, I started right away. Mm-hmm. I was so fascinated by the way the light would work on the papers. And I used negatives, but I also became interested in photograms where you would take objects that were translucent or transparent in some way and lay them on top of the paper, and then I would expose the negatives on through these objects. So sometimes there would be figures with an array of light bulbs or small bottles or feathers or, you know, organic material. And so I was working with that kind of image making, and they were all unique pieces. I mean, they weren't, you couldn't replicate mm-hmm. them. And I also wanted to draw and paint. I still do. And so I started drawing and painting on the pictures while they were still developing with developer and different kinds of developer and different kinds of chemicals. So the colors would start to come up caused by these chemical reactions. So the pictures themselves were one of a kind, but they also had this palette on them that you don't usually see in gelatin silver. And I started with the gelatin silver in the dark room.
You know, I remember when I was much younger hearing someone say about an artist or a writer, well, you know, they don't have that much imagination. They don't have that much to say. And that always puzzled me. What did that mean? They didn't really have much to say. Just listening to you, it sounds like you have a lot to say and you have a lot of imagination. It sounds like you're endlessly interested in the materials and what the materials can allow you to express and create.
Yeah, it's true. And I think, you know, it's a conversation. Artists have these conversations about the culture, and they share them with an audience. And so there's a kind of back and forth that happens when you have an exhibition and people get to look at that work. I had something I talked about at the banquet was my one of my early professors and my mentor, Harvey Himmelfarb. He was a very influential teacher for me. And he always said that there were two main challenges for artists. And the first one was and these were challenges that you don't figure out and resolve in 1 year and then they're set for the rest of your life. It's something that is constantly evolving. And the first one was what to make art about, how to make art about something that is significant and something that is meaningful for this conversation. And that's something that I'm really happy to have dialogues about with my students, too, trying to have them discover ways to make art that's about something important. And so that was the first challenge, is artists have to figure out what do they want to make art about. And that has its own kinds of evolutions and paths. And the second challenge is how to make a life as an artist that supports you, how to make a living, how to set up your life so that you have the time and the resources to do what you love. Mm. And that's another really big challenge for artists, and it always has been. And there's so many different kinds of answers to that question. I mean, before I went back to graduate school, because I was thinking about teaching, I was doing construction work and painting houses and doing roofing.
Which I guess all could add to your artistry in another way.
Yeah, I mean, some artists work at jobs that are directly in contact with their art making or related to their art making. And other artists do things that are completely different. And then they go into the studio once they have the resources to do it. Mm-hmm. So there's different ways to solve that problem.
Right. I want to tell people who may just be tuning in and joining us, my guest is Professor Linda Fries. She is a professor of visual arts here at UL Lafayette in the College of the Arts. She just recently received the Distinguished Professor Award, which is one of the highest awards you can receive here on the UL campus as a professor, and was recently honored at the banquet, the annual Distinguished Professors Banquet, sponsored by the UL Foundation. So we're all very proud of our distinguished professors and teachers who receive this award for work that they have been doing so well for so many decades here at the university. You bring up some interesting thoughts for a lot of people. You know, it's interesting to see the perspective people have when they look at a university campus and think, what do professors do? Many of them just imagine professors in a classroom talking to students and don't realize how so many of them in all disciplines, not just art, mathematics, English, music, that these are actually working professionals in their own field in addition to teaching. And so they really have two jobs that they're doing and, like yourself, often give it full time to both of them. And so when you talk about your teacher really encouraging you to think about those ideas, you know, how do you make it important? How do you make a living? That's what a professor grapples with all the time, because you're creating your art in addition to teaching students. How has that worked out over the years? How did you work into that place where you found enough time for both?
That's funny. When I was doing more physical labor, I used to work like crazy and just stash my cash, and then I would quit and go into the studio and work. And I find that when I'm teaching is so there's so many pieces to being a professor, and a lot of times my creative life will just have a pause while I'm, you know, during the semester. I mean, I work on the weekends, but mostly I would say the bulk of the creative work that I do happens in the summertime and on breaks. And as you know, I've also been lucky enough to have a residency at different artist residencies, and so I'll sometimes arrange to go live in a country for a while, and I get a studio there, and I work every day on the art, and I'm really removed from my normal everyday patterns of work mm-hmm. and at the university. And it gives me an opportunity to live in a place and soak in the culture of the place, the language, the kind of daily rhythms, and also to carefully look at the environment where I'm living. And that also folds itself into my art. Mm-hmm. So this summer I'm going to an artist residency in Assisi, Italy, and I'm going to be living in the wood, right in the woods near St. Francis of Assisi, and he was the patron saint of the animals and the birds and nature. So I'm really looking forward to that, and it's filled with these black oak forests. So you walk through the forest, and it's like you're in a fairy tale, and so I find that very inspiring, and it gives me. There's a kind of richness there that lives inside of you for a long time. And then I come home and I work on my pictures in my computer. I have a studio at my house also. So I also work here as well, but I really cherish those adventures in faraway places, because they remove you from your daily life, and you can really dive deeply into the material that you're working with.
And then really allows you to be very, very attentive to your students and your teaching when you're here. But let's talk about some of those residencies, because you've worked very hard on getting those. You've received some wonderful grants and acquired some amazing residencies during your tenure here at UL. And again, we are speaking with Professor Linda Fries, who just received the UL Lafayette Distinguished Professor Award. Tell us about some of your different residencies in different countries.
Well, I've always been connected with the European culture, especially Italy and France, and I've lived in both countries. And I would say in the last maybe 4 or 5 years, I've started traveling to South America and Central America, and I wondered how I would be able to bring those two cultures into some kind of conversation together. And I've spent a couple summers at the American Academy in Rome, and seeped in this the Catholic stories from the Bible there. I started to think about how I could speak about nature using some of the narratives that you find in the Bible, and talk about our challenges with the environment and finding clean food and clean air and taking care of nature. They became themes in the art that related to themes from like the Lamentation or Revelations or the Last Judgment. And it was an interesting way for me to bring those two sets of ideas together. Because when I was in South America and Central America, sometimes I live off the grid, so we're completely unplugged from electricity and living very close to the land and close to the natural world.
And very steeped in the mythologies of those places.
That's right, yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, now, I guess that brings me back, too, because I'm just thinking you did a lot of that with Louisiana culture and history earlier in your career, where you took a lot of those stories and religious traditions and created this beautiful series of collages that had to do with our history and culture. Could you talk about that just for a moment before we talk about some of the things that have come out of your European travels?
Yeah, sure. There were two bodies of work. The first one was called Reconstituting the Vanished, and that was about four women in Louisiana history. And we got to go back, and I did it. It was a collaboration with Barbara Allen, and she did the writing, and I did the images. And it was really early Photoshop, before they had layers or history. You couldn't undo anything. It was, I mean, the collage, you could only forward march. That was it. Whatever you decided to do on the artwork, it was not undoable. Mm. It was undoable. And but I loved Photoshop. I mean, it really appealed to me as a collage artist. Mm-hmm. So I collected imagery and symbols and objects that had to do with these women's lives, and I assembled them together in these collages. And they started from the early pre-Civil War days up until that was Marie Therese Quenquin, and it also included Marie Laveau, the voodoo priestess, and the Baroness Pontalba, who was the main architect for New Orleans. She brought her design and aesthetic sensibility from Paris to New Orleans. That was her main mission. And then the last woman was a more contemporary, but not contemporary, and that was Carolyn Dorman, and she was really the first environmentalist who really went to battle to stop the spraying of DDT and destruction of the environment.
It was instrumental in creating Kisatchi
National Park. So I worked on that for a number of years, and then when the hurricanes hit, I was just, like so many people, it was so devastating to us, even though we weren't in the direct path of the hurricanes. The whole state was affected. And I drove around and I took a lot of photographs of the destruction and the coastline. And after both of the storms in different directions. And when I came home, I had these piles of documentary pictures that were really just pure data. And they were so depressing. I really thought, what am I going to do with this? This is just awful. And it also they also looked like a million other photographs that were being made at any given moment in the world. And at that time, I was starting to study yoga and practice yoga. And I went on this pilgrimage to India. And it was... I was there for a number of weeks, and I was really interested in how the people there had built these altars to their gods and goddesses, the Hindu deities. And the altars reminded me of the things that Christians would do here in South Louisiana. And I thought, well, I photographed the images of these gods and goddesses, like Ganesha, the elephant god, and Tara, who is the goddess of domestic life. And I took these figures and I dropped them into the scenes of devastation, and they became these kind of prayers. And they were also a way to create a story around the history of the hurricanes that people could relate to, even if they weren't personally connected to it. It still spoke about ways that we find to psychologically cope with change in our lives, even if it's really devastating change.
Well, and again, going back to what your original professor talked about, of how to make art important. What do you do with it to make it say something?
Right. What are, you know, if you're going to have the time, you're going to spend the time and the energy and the resources to do it, you want to make something that is significant and also includes other people, that's not so personal that it becomes a private story, but it becomes a more universal aspect of the narrative that people can jump into and swim around in.
I loved all of those works that you did at that time. I have to say, my personal favorites are the ones that you created for Pachamama, which is a project you finished, I guess, last year. And in addition to the story and the subject matter, you begin a new style of working not only with your photographs, but painting them with this lovely, elegant tempera paint that I think has just really attracted so many people to your work. Tell us just a bit about Pachamama and how you got started on that project.
Sure. Pachamama is the South American goddess of the earth, and she doesn't really have she doesn't have a recognizable figure like the Madonna does in Christianity. But people there, they honor her, and they perform rituals to her, and sometimes when they have picnics outside, that's one of the main things you can do for Pachamama is to have a picnic and eat outside. And I wanted to make some pictures that spoke about our relationships with nature. And on a sabbatical, I went to work in Italy, and that was when I was trying to figure out how I could tie these two parts of my research together. And I stayed with a group of artists in northern Italy who showed me their my friend Brunivo Buttarelli had this collection of colored pigments from the earth in glass jars, and they were so beautiful, and they were really old. They were used to retouch frescoes in the churches there, and so I begged him, I cajoled him to give me some of these pigments. And what I did is I started painting on top of my photographs with egg tempera. And the egg tempera, you crack an egg and you take the yolk and you put the yolk in a little bowl, and you add the pigment to it, and that's the binder, and then you can paint right on top of it. Well, another aspect of the egg tempera is that I would use the eggs from the birds where I was working. So there was this connection with the bioregion where I was working, and I really loved that because, you know, I have a deep relationship with nature, and I wanted to somehow put that into the artworks in a way that they would be unique and they would hold the resonance of that particular place. So, you know, the eggs I use in Rome are in the Roman pictures, and the eggs that are from Costa Rica are in the Costa Rica pictures, and the eggs from Brobridge are in the Brobridge pictures.
Well, you know, knowing that, obviously, if I'm looking at your pictures, I don't know that it doesn't make my appreciation any less, but knowing that really does enrich my sense of what you're doing personally as an artist to connect all these places. And the idea that you're using this ancient pigment, you can see that. It looks old. It looks immediately like something you would find in an old grotto or a cave that you stumbled upon, but it's something you just created. And they're just exquisite. And do you have a website where people can go to see those images?
Yeah, my website is lindafreese.com, Linda with a Y, and my last name is Freese, F-R-E-S-E.
People can see images from those different projects.
Yeah, that's right. And I also want to mention that, I mean, you mentioned the caves, and I just, that's one of my passions is prehistory. And for a long time, I have tried every year to go to a prehistoric site to photograph it and also to just walk around and feel that energy of the place. And the caves have been, you know, as I started studying prehistory, I kept going back and back and back. And I was like, wow, I can go farther back than this. Oh, and farther back. And prehistory is identified by a time when there was no written word. So there's no books, there's no text that describes what's going on. I mean, you really have to engage your imagination to wonder what it was like for these artists. And last summer, I decided to go on another cave tour, and I went into the Dordogne Valley in France, and I spent a couple days there, and every day I went to a different cave, and all the caves are completely different. But you go into the caves and you wonder, who were these artists that made these amazing paintings?
Tens of thousands of years ago.
Yeah, most of the caves I visited are about 29,000 years old, and I saw paintings and also engravings where they draw into the wall, and also sculpture. So the early artists were making these very realistic pictures of animals that used all kinds of dimensions and colors and drawing into it. So, and that's a really hard thing for artists to, there's not very many artists that can combine sculpture and drawing and carving and painting with color all together, and of course do it in the dark zones of the cave where they sometimes have to walk. I mean, sometimes when we went to see the paintings, they're not at the front of the caves. I mean, they're way deep into what we call the dark zone. So sometimes we would have to walk maybe a kilometer to get there. And we have these flashlights, but, you know, the early artists, they brought torches with them. And something else I noticed last summer, which I hadn't really thought about too much, but now of course it seems really obvious to me, is that music was an integral part of looking at the art and probably making it too, but actually experiencing the art. The acoustics in the caves are phenomenal. So you know that they were drumming and singing and chanting in the caves. And I just love imagining what that was like. And the pigments come from far away. I mean, the artist traded the pigments, and some of the pigments come from hundreds, if not thousands, of miles away. So it was really a ritual for them, and it was the beginning of creativity and also the beginning of language. I mean, this was a way that different tribes could speak to each other, and they could also connect generations. So when you look at the caves, it's multi-generational. I mean, there might be a cave where they painted on it, and then no one painted in it for 3,000 years. And then they came back, and they had another frieze go in there.
You know, I want to tell people, my guest Linda Fries is a visual arts professor here at UL Lafayette and just recently received a Distinguished Professor Award at the banquet that they just had. And she's my guest here at KRVS. I think a couple things, there are probably young people listening right now saying, if that's what it means to be an artist, I want to be an artist. And I can imagine the ones who just want to be your student so they get to hear about these experiences and learn about what you can do when you're trying to make your art important. You work very hard to go on these trips and find these residencies and write grants. That's all an even another part of what professors do here at the university in order to create their own work. And if people would like to see some of these images you're speaking about, they can find them at your website. And, of course, you have publications as well. Pachamama was made into a catalog, and it's just a lovely, lovely book where people can see those images. Again, just we're honoring the professors here at UL Lafayette. A series of the interviews with the distinguished professors here on campus and the distinguished teachers. Linda Fries has been here at UL 27 years, came here in 1986, and has been educating generations of artists. We just mentioned Stephanie Patton, who had come here for an interview as well.
Yeah.
She's now a working artist, as well as many others who you have taught and inspired over the years. And I'm sure they're hoping that you'll be here for a long time inspiring future artists.
Thank you.
Do you have an exhibit coming up somewhere or some way that people can interact with your work?
Well, we're still working on it, but I think that the ACA is going to show some of my work in May. They have a show called, I think the title's going to be called 1,000 Words, and it's about artwork that is narrative in nature and has stories that want to be told by looking at the visual image. You want to tell a story. So I'm going to show some of the early Reconstituting the Vanished pictures, probably. And then also maybe some of the collage work from a body of work that I did in Italy called Immagini Pagan, or Pagan Imaging. And that's about, you know, different groups of people who have lived very close to the land, and they regard their connection with the divine as they reach their connections with the divine through their relationships with nature. And the place I'm going to this summer, I'm going to be working on a body of work that's about the sacred well, or
just a reminder for those people who didn't hear you earlier, that's in Assisi.
Assisi,
yes.
That's
well, we'll
right.
Look forward to seeing those works, hopefully at the Acadiana Center for the Arts, and perhaps having you back with the curators to talk about those works, and then looking forward to the Assisi pictures at some point as well.
Thank you.
Linda, thank you so much for coming by KRVS. Again, Linda Fries, visual arts professor here at UL Lafayette, just recently received the Distinguished Professor Award here at the university, highest award for professors to receive. Thank you for all your work and your inspiration to all of us.
Thank you so much.